podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast. With me, Russell Guyver, two of my regular guest contributors, well, one very regular, Andy Bravery. Welcome back to you, sir.
Hi there.
Excellent. And we've got a less frequent but still well-regarded contributor, Mr. David Townsend, back to the podcast. Hello, David.
Hi, Russell. Good evening, everyone.
Yeah. How's sunny Bexhill? Hope it's well.
Yeah, not quite as sunny as it was yesterday, but yeah, not bad. Not bad.
It's been a crazy summer. Andy is in Patcham in Brighton nowadays as well. And the weather's been brilliant here, but not probably as good as the weather is today in the home of our other guest, a very, very special guest who's joining us for the first time on the podcast. He is, I think it's fairly safe to say, an Albion legend. very much so. A cult hero, I think you were voted for at one point, and Albion's best player of all time, I think you were also voted for at one stage. A very, very warm welcome to Mr. Peter Ward. Hello, Peter.
How are you all doing?
All good, all good.
All the better for talking to you, Peter.
Cheers.
Yeah. Absolutely, and you are in your now regular haunt of Tampa Bay, I presume?
Yeah, just relaxing. In the house, I was going to do, like I said, I was going to do the podcast outside, but it's not, although it's 94 degrees, it feels like 102. So it was a bit too hot. So we're inside.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's a sensible move probably. Yeah. And we're recording this UK evening time and afternoon time your side. So, yes, it probably is the heat of the day, isn't it, at the moment? Well, yeah. It's a very great pleasure to have you on, obviously. And you were an Albion legend, as we mentioned, for, a good solid 4 years in the second half of the 70s, where you really made your name, a free scoring striker for us. Alongside, of course, Ian Mellor, who was the your legendary partner, Spider Mellor. We'll probably get into talking about him a little bit later on. But where we wanted to start, really, was just to get back to the earlier days and how it all came about. Now, reading your biography from Matt Horner, you came up through the Southern League and you were in Burton. But before that, you'd been playing, as I understand it, Saturday and then Sunday football. Having been told at every stage, too small to play, won't make it as a footballer, schools, teams, all that sort of stuff. You did get your chance, I think, according to the biography. I think it was at the age of 14, wasn't it, playing for a team there? Was it Borough-Wash?
Yeah. Borough-Wash United.
Yeah, tell us about that then.
It was just my cousin's husband played on the team, and he knew I could play a bit, so he said, come along. So I did, and yeah, from 14, playing with the men, which builds you up, I suppose.
Yeah. I'd say so, yeah. I mean, that's the exact opposite of what you've been told previously, isn't it? You were told, oh, too small to play at all for your age groups you're in, and then suddenly you are playing at age 14 with an adult team, and being a striker, of course, I'd imagine you got a fair bit of rough treatment as well.
I did, but I was pretty quick, so, you know. And you learn to, like, what you're trying to do, kicking me. I mean, you're not going to catch me first, you know what I mean? So you learn to give a bit of crap back to them.
Yeah. And you did pretty well with that. And also with, I think it's Redfern, isn't it? The team you joined.
Yeah, before I went to Burton, I went to Redfern. And they were in a much higher league. And I scored quite a few there. And then Burton came in. And I was in their reserves to start with. And then they had a cup game at Grantham. I think it was Grantham.
Yeah.
And I got a hat-trick. So that from then on, I was in the team. But I was up front with Ian Storymore, the ex-Forest Man United player, and Frank Wignall, who played at Derby and Forest. So I had a couple of old guys with me, I suppose, helped.
Yeah. And this is a sort of team that's met a mixture of ex-pros, up-and-comers like yourself, and like I'm guessing a few seasoned campaigners in the non-league circuit as well.
Yeah. A guy called Frank Corrigan. He'd been playing in that league all the time. So, yeah, there was a few of those.
Yeah, and scored a lot of goals. And I'm looking at how... So you ended up going to Burton Albion. And as I understand it, I think made your debut in 1974, scoring a hat-trick. And I think this wasn't the only time you did this on a debut, was it? Is that right?
No. Under-21 debut.
Exactly, for the England team later on, the under-21s, yeah.
Yeah.
Not bad going. A good way to announce yourself, isn't it, I guess?
Yes. Trouble is, once I got a hat-trick, they put me in the full squad, but I never really got a chance to play. I played about 5 minutes in Australia. That's about it.
Yeah.
And you were managed by, is it Ken Gutteridge that was later
at Burton? Yeah, went to the Albion.
Yeah, went to the Albion and eventually was part of the method to get you over to the other Albion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
He did.
Well, Andy, sorry, I think you were going to say something there on that. I mean, you've obviously got a bit of a grassroots thing, Andy, haven't you, going on with your coaching of teams. I mean, what's your take on this kind of thing with Peter playing, especially that thing about being a 14-year-old playing in a sort of like men's non-league team?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not really sure that would happen these days. But
I don't think so either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, I was also struck a little bit by the route you took, because I remember when he did it for longer, but Nobby Horton, when we spoke to him, he had quite a long period of time in non-league football before he came, you know, via Port Vale to Brighton. Yeah. And I think Peter Taylor signed him, was it Peter Taylor that signed you? I think it was it?
Yeah. We came at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I certainly think that Peter Taylor clearly had I'm always fascinated by like scouting and what people look for, but clearly Peter Taylor, his entire career showed that he had a really good eye for a footballer. They brought you two guys in, and really that's when we began, although he didn't then manage it ongoing, that's kind of, I felt like when we transformed really as a club.
Yeah. When Mullis took over, it was Peter's team more or less. Mm. And then Alan brought other players in gradually, and we went up the leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose really one of the questions I want to ask, it sort of takes it away from kind of like your career. I just wonder, what was it like the very first time you were playing in a match and people started singing your name?
I don't know, it's too far away. Too long ago. It was great. I remember, because I scored on my debut at Hereford and the fans were going mad then. And then the next home game, I got my shorts ripped, so I had to change my shorts at the side of the field, the pitch, and I wiggled my bottom to the crowd. That went well.
It was the West Stand that had the pleasure of this, I understand. Was that right?
Right. Yeah.
I think Sammy Nelson did that later, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds as if you're, had the character for it, I think, right from the off. Just a couple of bits from the biography, just to add in as well. I've got a couple of quotes here. One apparently for your mum saying, a real good little lad. And your dad said he was no trouble, always well behaved. Maybe not always then, with that wiggle on the pitch, but fair enough. But also your own quotes.
In a few windows in the street of neighbours' houses, and my dad going absolutely nuts then, because he had to pay for new glass and what have you. But I remember hitting one volley once, beautiful volley, scored, but there was a house not far behind. It went straight through. This was a Sunday as well, and people were having their Sunday dinner, and it heard screaming as the ball went through the window. We ran off, to say the least.
Well, that's a bit of an additional side dish, isn't it? If the ball lands on the table, so trying to scarper, but getting caught out, I'd imagine everyone knows everyone. I'm guessing in the neighbourhoods back then, and you don't get away with it for long, do you? Just for a few minutes, I think.
In fact, once my shoe come off and got stuck in the window. It was right in the window.
Yeah, that's quite incriminating, isn't it, as well? Yeah, you're not going to get away with that one. Yeah. And this is the classic thing, isn't it? The playing football in the street, if you've got a local park as well, obviously. But, you know, playing in the street, in the gardens, local rec, whatever it might be. A typical kind of upbringing for a lad at that era, I'm assuming so.
Sorry, my wife was talking to me.
What? Do you want us to join in, maybe? Possibly not. Well, I think he's just stalling for time on this one.
Yeah, she was telling me that when she was young, she kicked a soccer ball, as she said, through a window as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's meant to be. It's written in the stars, you two to be together.
True story. You be quiet down there.
She could join us if she wants, So you've got your typical upbringing and the Albion move, as I understand it, we'd come in for you before we did sign you, and I think the offer was rejected at the time, probably because it was in the middle of a season, I'm guessing. Sometime, I think, was it around the November of the season before you eventually signed?
Yeah.
So how did that come about particularly? Who was watching you? Presumably Ken Gutteridge was involved at some point there, and what did Peter Taylor make of you?
Unless Ken told Peter that, you know, we have this young man. Oh, the sneeze. And but I'm not sure, because I remember another couple of clubs were watching as well. But nothing came of that. Or I was not informed about it. But, you know, you find out. But, I mean, I remember just going back a little bit. All the neighbourhood kids from for a few miles met at this field, the green, up the green, we called it the green, and from 5 years old to 15, you picked two teams, and that was it. So I always played with older kids as well, all the way through school. So, but that's the way it was. You know, it's not like that now, because there's organised team. There was no organised teams besides school when I was playing then. So it's that's all we had. So straight from school, never got any homework done ever. Straight up the green till it got dark, and then you went home.
Yeah, in the biography it's saying you perfectly able academically in terms of bright enough, but just it was a matter of just rush the homework in the mornings, stay out all night, the night before, play the games. True love, and you know, it's the game, and it's wonderful to see. And I suppose you still get that to some degree with some players now, but maybe there's a more romanticized version of it in the previous era. But I think it's great. It's superb to have that one singular passion that you know is going to drive you. And I think it was saying, you know, the biography was saying that you've you were asked at careers advice what you wanted to do and said be a footballer, and yet again they were saying too small, you don't do that.
Yeah. And then a few years after that, I'll never forget his name, to be honest. His name was Mr. Kelly. He wrote to Brighton, to the club, and asked if I'd present trophies at the school. I thought, yeah, but I did. I it was in Derby, so I went back and I did present the trophies to. And I said, "You remember what you said to me?" He said, "Oh yeah, yeah."
Fair play, fair play. He was gracious enough with it, I suppose. I presume you gave him a bit of stick over it.
Of course,
gotta be done. Gotta be done.
Of course.
So on the Albion career then, as in the Brighton of Albion career, you've signed eventually in the summer afterwards. So this is 75, but I didn't actually get a chance to play the first team for quite a time, wasn't it? I didn't realise actually until
we changed in the away dressing room. because we weren't in the first team squad as such. And we'd train on our own, you know what I mean? We'd have, it'd be the reserves and that, and the first team trained. And then now and again, we'd all train together. But, there was 8 games to go when I got in. And it was quite a shock because I'd been the sub 2 previous games. But remember, in them days, there was only 1 sub. And they weren't really used unless somebody got hurt. And I think once was against Bury away. And the other one was at home. I can't remember who. But then we went to Hereford. And we're having a team meeting there again. And I'm sitting there and Pete said, Fred, you're not playing today. Peter, you're playing. I thought, oh, crap, no. And it was a great surprise. And then and I had a cold as well. Glenn Wilson had to give me a tot of whiskey before we went out. It was, well, he did that in the winter anyway. and then scoring after 50 seconds or so, it was, and in M days, there was only 2 or 3 games on the TV, weren't there? So, it was on Match of the Day, which we actually stopped in London on the way back or somewhere and we watched Match of the Day. And everyone knew you then, because everyone watches Match of the Day and everyone knew my name then. So it was nice to be able to score on your debut, but to score on your debut on Match of the Day was not better.
Brilliant. I mean, and also, as you said, there's hardly any games on Match of the Day then. It was pretty much literally correct grammar to say match rather than matches, as of course should be really the case now. But it was a third division game, of course, we're talking about here as well, which is even more amazing, isn't it?
Really? I remember they had, what, 2 or 3 a year?
Yeah.
2 or 3 a season, and it was,
brilliant. So you're going to that game thinking, oh, you might not even be on the bench. Next thing you know, not only are you starting, but you find out, presumably afterwards, is it, that it was on Match of the Day? Or did you know in advance?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know, anyway. We were trying to think. Because when I scored, Sammy Morgan said he touched it. So Sammy said it was his goal. And if it weren't on Match of the Day, to this day, it would have been his goal.
Yes, so, the TV helped you, yeah.
Just look, that everything turned out perfectly.
Yeah, and this is Sammy Morgan, who's one of the guys that was brought in, I think, just before you, was it, or around the same time, and was keeping you out of the team as well prior to that. So you must have thought, well, now I've got in the team.
Fred, Binny and Sammy. Yeah. And Neil Martin as well for a while. You remember, because when I signed... I stayed in a house in Rottingdean with Phil Beale and Neil Martin.
Right, yeah. Excellent. Nice place to be, actually. That was an Albion house, presumably, therefore.
Yes, I'd have thought so.
Yeah. And it's big. It's quite nice, I suppose, when you're moving down to an area, maybe that's quite good for integration within, you know, bonding with the team and that sort of thing. It's quite nice, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
It
was scary, you know what I mean? It was scary because them two players were sort of their own legends.
Yeah.
And I'm just nothing.
Yeah, and I might bring David in on this one as well, because, I mean, David, you're, if you don't mind me saying very politely, a little bit older than I am, so you'll probably remember this era a bit better than I will. I'll get into when I sort of start spoiling in a minute, Peter, but I mean, David, you'll probably remember the Fred Binney days, wouldn't you? And
Yeah.
I mean, he was a prolific striker, and I think, according to the records, he'd scored something like 25 goals that season at the point where he was dropped suddenly for you to come in on that debut. And I think it was something to do. It seems like there was a big disparity between the home and the away form. And I'm guessing he was dropped, was it because he was more effective in home games, or he played
Possibly, yeah. I mean, he was good for that, but I think he came back into the team the next home game. And I played alongside him then.
David, do you remember that particular time, Fred Binney in general and the players of that time, and also did you happen to see Peter's debut?
No, I didn't see the debut. But I would have seen you know, trying to remember now, to think back to then, I would have seen those early matches, I think. I think one of my earliest memories of you, Peter, was playing against Mansfield. I'm not sure whether that was your first season or your second season, and the Albion won 5-1, and you could see then that something special was beginning to happen, because it was I'm not sure how many you scored in that match, but it was quite obviously a comprehensive victory, and you know, I mean, just the not would that, I don't know if you can remember that match yourself, but would that have been under Peter Taylor or under Mullery?
Mullers.
Maybe, yeah. I was going to say perhaps a little bit later, but
it was. I do remember, not so much the match, but I do remember getting 3 against Mansfield.
Yeah, that must have been the same game, I think. Yeah, it was a, and you know, that you could see then that something special was happening, you know, because the attacking football was just superb, you know, and all out attack.
We had a good team. It was good.
Yeah, fantastic side. Yeah, and you know, everyone seemed to gel together well. You know, the great team spirit from the outside, it looked really good.
Yeah, we were a tight-knitted group. We all liked each other, and we really got on well with the fans. So it was just one big happy family in Brighton.
I mean, the constant thing that keeps popping up when you're interviewing fans of the players of the era is that liking the area as a place to live and finding it a really nice place to play your football. I think Nobby was saying the fans were one of the standout things he'd noticed before he signs, that the fans were really good, getting behind the team, lots of vocal support, decent crowds for the level we're at as well. Would you say that was I guess it's a bit different because you're stepping up, so it's kind of it's a temptation anyway, isn't it, to get offered a higher level. But do you reckon that might have played a part in some way? And how was it in that first season? Did you really feel the affection of the fans so soon?
Once I got in the first team, the fans were great. Yes. Brilliant.
Excellent.
I mean, they still are. I mean, there's kids come up to me and go crazy. How do you know me? I ask them and they say, oh, my granddad or my dad, or, you know, it's amazing.
And we still sing the song. That probably helps. Then kids will go, well, who's that? Who's that you're singing about?
Yeah. You cover every position in the team, Peter.
That's right. You're 1 to 12, aren't you? So, yeah. I don't know how you do it. Andy, yeah.
So I just wanted to ask Peter, like, so when you were scoring all those goals and you were getting the adulation of the fans, is that something you're aware of back then, that actually you are creating, you know, lifetime experiences and memories for fans? Or is that more something you become aware of as you got older, you know, and you reflect back and you meet fans and you realize how important you are?
Yeah, at the time you don't realize you love the singing about you, and you know, you love when you meet them. Of course, we used to, after games, we'd go to the same pub, all the players, and there'd be fans there. We're just you couldn't do that now. We can't do it now. But yeah, it was later on, getting older, you realise how fantastic it was.
Yeah. I mean, and also the part, because, you know, like, you know, I started going to the Albion with my dad in late 75, 76. And really, if I'm being honest, 76, 77, I'm 9, 10 years old. I've got my little stool. I'm on the East Terrace with my dad and his mates, you know, and I consciously remember a lot of my mates at the time were all Liverpool fans because that was the team, you know, and I didn't want to be, I wanted to be a fan of a team I could go and watch. And I just struck lucky really that I also started watching it just at the point where really Brighton took off as a club,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, and you are, along with people like Nobby Orton and then a little bit later, Mark Lawrenson, you know, you're not interwoven really in my childhood. You know, you guys, you know, it's kind of, yeah. And when I think about Brighton, you are the people that come to my mind. I think there's something about your childhood when you follow a team as well, you know, and I always wonder about whether players realise the impact they have. And I think probably it's, like you say, it's something that when you get older and people start talking to you about it and you remember, and then you realise just how kind of, you know, like how much joy you brought to people, you know, by just doing your job, really doing what you were good at.
Yes.
You know, it's quite something, really.
It's magical.
Mm.
I mean, it's the same. It was the same for me growing up as well, because you follow your idols, and that's why you want to become a footballer.
Mm.
So, I suppose it's the same for me growing up, but you don't realise until, you know, later. What it's like.
Yeah.
Who were your idols, Peter, when you were growing up?
Law Best and Charlton.
He's a mad man.
They're not bad heroes, though, are they? Let's face it.
I'm old enough to remember Ian's story more. And I think, was it Steve Wignall who was at Forest you mentioned Wignall. Earlier?
Yeah,
oh, Frank Wignall. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But Story Moore, I remember, was a good winger, wasn't he?
Jimmy Green was one of my idols too. So, you know,
yeah.
What a player. But, I mean, you can see why the Best and Law influences in particular make sense, don't they, there, as well as being for the team. It's those individuals were just nippy. I think wispy was the way you were described by somebody somewhere in the past. I don't know what that really means, but if that is to describe you, it's probably to describe them as well, isn't it? Great players, but nimble, I suppose.
Yeah, yes. Because my dad used to take me to Old Trafford to watch the United. So obviously that's when, you know, I became a United fan. I'm Brighton till I die, don't get me wrong. I watch all the matches. Well, we get every match here live, every match of every, you know. So I watch, I think, nearly every game in the Premier League every week. Yeah, I always got Brighton on. And it's just been fantastic getting to the Premier League and staying in it. Touch wood, we'll be in it for a long time.
Yeah, playing a good brand of football as well.
I think in the book as well, I remember me and Laura were asked, you know, will Brighton ever get back into the Premier, you know, top division? And he said, no chance ever. And I said, you never know.
Yeah.
So I was right.
Yeah.
Loro strikes me as a natural pessimist, I think, really. Yeah. we actually influenced his, you know, this prediction thing you get over in the UK where he goes up against some celebrity or other every week.
Yeah. You pick the storm.
Yeah, we had a go at him because he kept picking us to lose every week, and we had a go at him about it. And he started changing his predictions a little bit off the back of that. We're claiming that one.
We did. I remember he does pick us to lose. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we worked out we were going to have 16 points for the season one year based on his predictions, which would have almost broken Derby's record for the lowest number of points in the Premier League. But no, I mean, it is a brilliant brand of football, and we have come a long way, and I do think we'll probably get into this a little bit later on. But I do remember during the stadium planning application stages, somewhere along the line, I think it must have been after one of the rejections and it went to appeal or something, you were saying at the time, and it was sort of with a mindset to you in the States as well, and what happens and how things get done over there, that you just couldn't believe that this was such a big issue to get a new stadium built. You know, requirements there, the need is there, the desires there, and the you know, from enough people, and yet there were things hindering it. And you, as an onlooker, sort of looking back to a club you used to follow and wishing the best for them, you must have been immensely frustrated seeing the very bureaucratic way that the English system works.
I came over and did the walk along the seafront.
Yes.
With Steve Coffin.
Hmm.
And it was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
The trouble, the hardship that Brighton went through to get a stadium, it wouldn't happen here, no.
Yeah, it's so frustrating, isn't it? And I think it goes down as the longest planning application for a sporting facility in European history, apparently. I think that's right, which says it all, doesn't it? It's just typical us having to suffer so much. There's been a long struggle, but my years supporting the Albion date from the 79-80 season. So I only just caught the very end of your time with the Albion anyway. And obviously it's bookended at the moment, being in the top flight again. But we have had a lot of struggles in the intervening years. But in that 79-80 season, did you play the full season that season before you transferred? Was it in the summer?
No, I went to... Oh, God. I went to Forest. I'd have to look.
Yeah.
Everton at home was my last game or something like that.
Okay, yeah. Because I'm trying to work out, unfortunately, the research tool I'm using doesn't tell me our lineup against Middlesbrough, but that was in April 80. So you would you have gone by then?
I'd have gone by then.
Yeah. So I hadn't seen you live from that first spell. I think I would have seen you on TV once or twice, I think. But as far as I know, Middlesbrough was my first game. So it was only later on when you sort of had the brief return, I think I might have seen you then.
Yeah, I came back in on loan in 82, 83.
Yeah.
I remember you Peter scoring a winner against Man United, actually, in your second spell.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, yeah.
You also scored the winner, didn't you, up at Newcastle away in the Cup?
I did.
Started the journey to Wembley.
Yeah.
Pete, I was just going to ask you as well. I mean, you know, back in your day, there was a lot more about striker partnerships than today. In fact, we even get to like talking about whether false nines, whether even got a forward. So who in your mind that you played with was your favourite forward to play with in a partnership?
I mean, Spider. Had to be.
Yeah.
Teddy. Although some fans weren't sure about him. I thought we did well. And Ray Clark.
Uh-huh.
We had a little good partnership for a little while before he left. But I think Ian Mellor was... I think he sort of knew where I was going and vice versa. And it just seemed to work out with the rest of the team as well. You know? So,
you just get that just understanding, don't you? They say this about particularly strikers, probably centre-backs as well, but particularly for strikers, this understanding, this sixth sense where you just know what the other person is going to do. So you can play the ball into the space you know they're about to run into. The defender can't read that, and it creates a huge amount of extra success on the pitch. Would you say that's fair?
And it's not even doing it on the training pitch either. It's just... You just know each other, and you know I knew what he was going to do, and he knew where I was going to go and when I needed the ball. So, I mean, quite a lot of the time, he didn't get it back.
And did you get on well off the pitch as well? Was it one of those weird things where it's only on the pitch it works?
No, we got on great. I was at... I hadn't seen him for quite a while, and I was at a Brighton Man United game at Old Trafford. I'd gone over there with a few friends from here, and we got in one of the lounges after the match, and Spider was there. So we had a real good long chat, drink, and I've seen him since at Brighton a few times, you know, when the club do something. But Yeah, he's. I see. I was talking to Andy Rollins the other day. We still see when I come down. There's a few of us get together. I mean, I know at the moment Peter O'Sullivan's struggling with. He was in hospital, and my wife's been helping his other half arrange stuff. But so I'll send my love to Sully.
Yeah.
And hope he recovers quickly.
Yeah, well, Andy here has been quite prominent on Twitter, along with Spencer, who I'm sure you know, Peter, Spencer Vignes, who, you know, in trying to raise awareness of this, because it seems that the aftercare is not great, you know, through, through the medical side of things. Overstretched, no doubt, I'm sure they are. But I really hope he can come back to some kind of recovery. It's horrible to, you know, to hear those things. You know, they happen. These things happen. But we wish him all the best, definitely. And what was he like as a player? Just tell us a bit about him, actually, because obviously he was there the whole of the 70s, so the whole of your...
Very good player, Sully. Made a lot of goals for me, obviously. We got on well on the field as well. And he was a funny guy as well. And we all got on. It was great. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, Spencer said he's quite he could be quite cantankerous, but with a slight wink in his eye. Is that what you're quite a dry sense of humour type, is he?
I remember after the season, we used to go away, you know, Spain for a week. And I remember Glenn Wilson was drunk one night and Sully peed all over him. I couldn't say that really, should I, on the podcast. You can have deleted it.
No, we're keeping that in.
On him.
It's all water under the bridge, if you'll pardon the pun.
So we had great times at the end of the season. It's just the players, you go away together. So you're all together for a week. And it's just, you don't even have to bond because we were a great. We're like a family. We look after each other.
Do you think, Peter, that that actually added to the team's performance? It was almost like, the way you talk about it, it was almost like a bunch of mates playing football, just happened to be doing it professionally. Do you think it added to the level of performance?
Getting your mates, going down the park and just playing a five-a-side. But yeah, it was just like that. It was amazing. Amazing.
Just happened to be really good. It'd be a hell of a five-a-side team, wouldn't it?
They played a bit of five-a-side at that point, didn't they? I remember there was just something on Sports Night or something. There was some indoor five-a-side.
It was, yeah. It's
like a professional team. I remember you playing in that.
I do a little bit. I do remember, but I can't remember when or where it was. I think it was in London. Was it in London?
I think it was, yeah. It might have been at Wembley Arena.
Yeah, I think it was. I can't remember how we did, or it's too long ago.
I tell you, talk about memories. We had a Seagulls Over London event at the Amex, and Andy Rollins helped to host it, and he was with us in the museum there, and he's watching a bit of video of you, and he could see he was like back in the day. He's back there, and he just said. You know, like you watch these forwards, you said, and the one thing that all these top forwards have got in common is they've got tremendous balance. And I just think, well, that's not something you can train someone or coach someone to have. And when I watch Brighton now, I think the same about Trossard. He just has tremendous balance on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's just sort of something that, you know, there are things you can coach. There are just some things I think players just bring with them, don't they? It's just those sort of natural abilities.
Yeah. I mean, you could say you're born with it. But I think growing up, you've got the ball with other kids and it's just, I don't know. You can't coach it, really.
No. Were you one of those players growing up where, like, you always had a ball at your feet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we've kind of lost, you know, in sort of like the life we live. I mean, I just look at where I grew up in Patching. When I go back there now, you couldn't play football there now. There's too many cars about. But that's kind of where you sort of informally learnt it. I mean, we can do a lot more coaching now. So one of the differences from when I was a kid is that every kid now has a football when they're coaching. You coach them, everyone has a football, whereas like we had one between 15 and it was a full-size ball. So you can coach those bits, but there's other bits that they've lost. And I was sort of talking to my son, and I was sort of saying to him, well, I think, you know, you could get better if you just get a football, a little football, and you kick it all the way to school and back every day. So we did that for about I think he did it for about 18 months. And I explained to him that I'd learned about that from Trevor Brooking, who used to kick a tennis ball to and from school. I then had to show him some video to show him who Trevor Brooking was, obviously. but it's interesting how many top players are always described as kids. They always had a football at their feet, and they're just kind of, they're practicing and they're training and they're coaching, you know, adds to it. But really a lot of it is just that early days of just kicking a football about, just doing what we thought was just what you did in life. Wasn't much else to do.
It was a lot different back then. They have too much video games. You know, there's a lot to do, isn't there now?
Yeah, I have to say the one thing I definitely think that I was coaching up in London. I was coaching an under-11s team. Well, it went from under-7s to under-11s. And one good thing about them playing FIFA is they all knew the offside rule. And I figured that's the only way they could know about it is because playing FIFA. So that helped. That was about the only thing benefit I could find from it. But that did definitely help. Yeah, yeah.
But at least there's some good comes out of it somewhere then.
Well, you know, you've got to always look for the positives, haven't you? Always got to look for the positives.
Some of the most talented players out there, you hear these anecdotes. So they're the ones that last on the training field as well, even as pros who have made it for years since, are the last ones out there, you know, whether it be a lot of the strikers like Shearer, you hear stories of them and various of his contemporaries, David Beckham. I think Ronaldo's like that as well. They're just relentless with their passion for just wanting to be with the ball all the time. Do you think I'm pretty sure the answer is yes to this, but would you say that was the case with you, Peter? Because it sounds like you were out at all hours when you were growing up. And did that carry on as your career started?
No, I mean, after training, I'd do some shooting. One of the goals would stay behind. And, you know, I'd do some shooting and a little dribbling shot. But usually they'd say, come on, get off the pitch.
That's the classic thing, playing as dusk and eventually nightfall comes down and your mum's coming out trying to find out where you are. Yeah. Classics.
Dinner's ready. It's been ready hours.
With the grassroots stuff as well, there's one other interesting thing, because I mean, if I was asked to say what are my favourite or the best 10 goals I think I've ever seen live in the flesh, I'd probably have two or three of those would be Sunday football or kickabouts in the park. They could come any time, couldn't they? Anyone could score a worldie, obviously not on a regular basis, but once in a while. So asking you about your favourite goals that you've scored, did any of them come before you made it as a professional? You know, did you score an amazing goal for Redfern, for example, that's just the best ever? Because we've never seen that one, obviously.
I scored a few, dribbling from the halfway line, around the goalie. Remember one against Swindon at the goalstone. I got the ball just in our half, right near where the dugouts were, the benches. And I dragged it back and I went back through three or four, around the goalie and scored. I remember that one. Obviously, United one was a chest and volley. And the three England goals when I scored three, I think the first was right foot, the second was left foot, and the third was a header.
What are your memories of that night, Peter? Because obviously it was actually at the Goldstone, wasn't it? And it was there was a good crowd in there. I mean, particularly for an England under-21 game. I think it was against Norway.
Yeah, apparently the floodlights went out and there was trouble with traffic or something, because otherwise I think there would have been a bit of bigger crowd, but it was a good crowd.
About 20,000 I think were out there.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. What are your memories of that night before, you know, before the game and that?
just going out, nervous. Just hoping, you know, you get a goal and we win. And I did, and we did. And it was just a great night. I mean, look, some of the players, Laurie Cunningham was playing, who's dead now. Peter Barnes, Gary Owen. Paul Bradshaw was in goal. Was he at Blackburn at the time? He came and played with me in Vancouver years after that. It's, and then afterwards, just everyone signing the ball in the changing room. You get the ball, everyone signed it. I've still got it. And then, it was a great night.
Yeah. It couldn't have gone any better, really, could it?
No.
From your perspective, no.
And as you said, you had that hat trick
with Holstone as well. That just added extra to it, you know.
You had that hat trick. You had a previous hat trick of playing for another team. You got that goal in Match of the Day, which apparently was the fastest goal scored in lifetime, at least on Match of the Day highlights, wasn't it, or something like that? I think, I don't know how long that lasted. Probably, I'd imagine that's gone now. But at the time, it was might be a fastest debut shown on Match of the Day. It might have been that, yeah, something along those lines. So you certainly march a card nicely and along the way. What we probably like to talk about when we get into, we'll do a second part in a moment, where I'm curious to know how it went with Forest, because I know that was an interesting time. And we've got to ask you, I'm sure you're going to come up with your Brian Clough impression in a moment. so we'd love to get that on there. And also, we want to talk about your time visiting back and with the fans in the modern time, and what you think of the current Albion team as well. So we'll get on to that in part two. But we'll take a brief break at this point. And so we're back with part two, still with Andy, David, and our very special guest, Mr. Peter Ward. Wardy. And Wardy, we've been talking about your career so far in terms of the non-league days, getting yourself at the Albion. And we talked a little bit about favourite goals. I mean, in terms of favourite memories at the Albion, just to round up on that side of things, what would you say were your favourite memories that you take from your time in Brighton? Can be other stuff other than goals on the pitch, or things away from the game?
Winning promotion, you know, especially when we were promotion to the first division. The bus, we had a, you know, on the bus and then at the Hove Town Hall, and just being, I remember we had our own private room. I think it was a Hove Town Hall. We had our own private room, our own bar. And you could walk in and out of, you know, but it's where all the fans were. And they had their bar, but they had to pay and ours was free. So we'd take it in turns, going up to the bar, getting around and bringing it back to the table. And I remember we said to Sammy Morgan, he's Irish, isn't he? I said, come on, Sammy, it's your round. So, you know, he was gone a while and he come back. He said, it's expensive. I said, what? He says, yeah, and it took me forever, you know, to get to the bar. I says, it's there, look. He went, oh, I thought it was out there, like, you know. Brilliant.
So you got long distance to pay rather than short distance for free. Lovely. Brilliant. What about the actual promotion game itself, the infamous Newcastle game? I say infamous in terms of the journey back. Apparently, it was absolute chaos, wasn't it?
It was, what's the word? Rememberable.
Yes.
It was, we were there for the week, or at least 4 or 5 days, played golf, And we had to win. And Newcastle were a good team, especially at home. And we just crash bang wallet. We got three goals. Mine was a decent goal, although the goalie should have saved it. Nobby's header. Me and what's it doing a 1-2 with Jerry finishing it. And mine. And we come in at half time and Muller's went nuts. He's going crazy. We're 3-0 up and he's going absolutely crazy because, you know, he wants to stay 3-0 or at least win. And I think Nobby had to say to him, calm down. You know what I mean? We're all right. And he was just panicking. And then they made it 3-1. But, you know, that was it.
Yeah.
And we went to the crowd after the game. And, yeah, that was great memories. And then the train ride back, the fans, we just mixed with the fans. And it was chaotic. It was absolutely brilliant. Amazing. What goes on that train stays on that train.
Yeah, well, everyone's got a story about that. I mean, we didn't used to get the train; we used to drive. But I was at that game. It's still my favourite ever Brighton game that day. And I remember like feeling really nervous before the game, and then like at half time, just feeling completely calm. It just went so well that first half. Mm. And they did come back into it second half, didn't they? But they and never the looked like.
Yeah, and the weather was weird. It was sunny. It even snowed a little bit in the second half. It was really.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And I remember also the Newcastle fans afterwards applauding you all on the pitch. Did. I'm sort of assuming that's because they valued your season, but I think they couldn't go and miss that. It also meant that Sunderland never went up.
Yeah. And we're very happy about that.
Yeah, yeah. That was a great day. See, that's another one of those kind of like memories that I still hold today, Peter. Yeah, I'm 55 now and I still hold that memory, you know, of that team on that day and everything. You know, I can still remember walking around the town with my dad's mates before the game, thinking about all the different permutations that might have to happen for us to get promoted. And then the game starting and it's half time and we're 3-0 up and you know, you're just thinking like this couldn't go any better, really. And then we're promoted and we're going to the first division and we're all on the driving on the way home thinking about, you know, we're going to Old Trafford, we're going to Anfield, we're going to Highbury, White Hart Lane. You know, it was just quite something, really.
Yeah, I was just pushing towards my 8th birthday, so I was too young to go to that game. Like the fact that it was the season before I started going live. So for me, it was the more recent time when we got the win against Wigan, which effectively guaranteed things. And that was equally as crazy a day. But David, were you at the Newcastle thing in 79?
No, I wasn't actually. I was just trying to think. 79, no, I would have been at university then, actually, my first year at university. And I don't think I had that. Ironically, I didn't get to see so many games in those days as I did later on, or before that even. You know, when I was at school in Sussex. But I didn't see that one, unfortunately. I can't even remember how I found out. Now, obviously, I did find out, but possibly not even till the next day. You know, in those days, no internet or anything. But yeah. I don't think we had a television in our student digs then.
About internet, I think most of us players in that late 70s, if we'd have had internet, we'd probably be all in jail.
Better not say any more about that then, whatever that is. Also, some of the tackling back then as well would probably get in jail for some of that. I mean, you would have played with, presumably you would have played with Paul Clark, wouldn't you, as well? Yeah, I mean, I it was sort of before my time a bit, but by all accounts, he was a proper hard bastard, I believe the expression is. Would you go along with that? And was he the hardest player, do you reckon?
I remember playing against Luton at the Goldstone, and I think it was Lil for Shiloh.
Oh, yeah.
Hit a shot. And I bet it was at least 2 seconds before you heard crack. And Corky had hit him.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think the it was at the north end, I think. And yes. You heard the ball bounce on the boards, and then you heard the crack.
Right.
Yeah. I was at that game. I remember that game, and I think the whole ground heard that crack. It was a pretty horrible moment, to be honest. He had a hell of a shot, didn't he, Paul Clark? I can remember Clark, a couple of thunderbolts from him.
He was a good lad as well. I see him as well now and again.
He had like legs like tree trunks, isn't he? The tank, they used to call him.
Yeah, because I know my mate Wedge is a big fan of his. He's his favourite player. So, yeah, I'm sure you like, if he's listening back to this, you'd like to hear a mention of him. So I had to throw that one in. In terms of the other players there, any other notable sort of comments from the teammates at the time? I mean, what was Nobby like, for example, as a captain? And anybody else that stood out in any way?
Everybody had their own. Nobby was good captain, you know. Helped everyone out on the field. Lauro was classy coming out the back.
Dreadful trainer, I am.
I think we all were. trying to think we'd be out there and Nobby had moaned now and again at me and other people. I remember Nobby, I was going on a dribble and Nobby's moaning, pass the ball, pass the ball. And I scored. And he's going, great goal.
He's complaining about Lauro running past him all the time, standing there waiting for something to develop from midfield, and suddenly
Lauro's going on. Yeah,
it was Lauro on the field. Yeah, cover me or something. You're shouting.
And he missed those last 3 or 4 games of that season because he broke his arm.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And we sort of, as players as well, panicked a little bit because he was at the back and he was. The Rock at the back as well, with Andy Rollins and Rolly. I talk to Andy Rollins quite often on the phone. Yeah.
I said we met him at Seagulls over London. Lovely fella, actually. Really nice guy. And,
he is.
And his wife runs the cake shop or something, doesn't it? The pot. Yeah.
He's there as well. Andy goes.
Yeah.
The cafe on Preston Park.
Yeah.
Russell, there's your segue into Forest, because remember Andy Rollins against Justin Fashanu. I think in the end it was a score draw. They were both got sent off, didn't they?
With Norwich, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think where he was from, wasn't it, Andy Rollins? I think he played at Norwich, didn't he?
I think he did. Yeah.
So, yeah, well, let's talk about Forest. So you moved from the Albion there. I think they'd shown interest in the past, maybe actually in your Burton days, but obviously they didn't sign him at the time. They eventually signed him from the Albion, from Brighton. And tell us about that. How did it come about? What was your experiences have been at that club?
First of all, driving up the M1, it was a Friday. It was a nightmare. It took forever. And... we get to the hotel, the ex-wife and I. We walk into the hotel, and the first thing out of Cluffy's mouth was, to my ex-wife, do you like his moustache? And she said, yeah. He said, Willie can keep it then. to me, when I went up there to sign. Yeah.
You hear so many stories about Brian Clough. I mean, you've told some, I think, as I said, I've seen you in a pub a couple of times and you've told a few of them there. I can't remember which ones are which now. There's so many stories. But, I mean, obviously he was a great manager. He had great success with Derby, later on with Forest.
I think what it was, he was good, mad manager. He he got good players and that played together well.
Yeah.
Because he never used to, he'd come around the training ground. I mean, we used to run down, come out of the ground, run down the Trent to where we trained. And he'd be there in his shorts and that, and a squash racket. And he'd just be going like this.
Swishing around.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, Peter, he was actually there, because that was the thing, wasn't it? Like Mallory used to say, like, no one knew how he did it because he was never around.
He wasn't, no. I mean, he'd come down again. But he'd say a few things in the changing room before, you know. Talking about fashion, I remember he was having a nightmare at Forest, and Cluffy came in the changing room with a picture of himself with a scoring a goal header. And so anyway, eventually he suspended Fashanu from training because he weren't scoring any goals. And with pay, but he turned up the next day. So Cluffy weren't there. So Ronnie Fenton was the coach. Fash said, I'm training. Because Ron kept saying, you can't train. You're suspended. He said, I'm training. And he was too big for him to argue with. So we go down to Trent and we start training. And all of a sudden, a cop car pulls up at the side of where we're training. And Fash sees this. So he goes to the other side of the field. And these two cops come on and arm up and take him away. Ridiculous. It was funny.
didn't you say there was a story about you, something to do with a coach and not being allowed on a coach, something in the rain or?
Oh, no. Well, there was a couple of times. We lost at Birmingham 2-0. And Cluffy hated Frank Worthington. And it all started when Shilton was goalkeeper with Forest. Well, he was then as well. And whenever, this is before I went to Forest, Frank Worthington at Birmingham would score. And the Birmingham fans, they found out where they get it, no idea, but they used to sing, Frankie Shad, your missus, right, behind the goal. And that really pissed Cluffy off. So we go to Birmingham, we lose 2-0. He scores both goals, Frank Worthington. And I didn't have such a good game. So we come on back on the bus. We're going up the M1. And I live Derby way. And the bus was going Nottingham way. And so I was getting a ride from Leicester Forest East service station. So and it's pissing down the rain. I've just got the club blazer, trousers. And I go to the front of the bus. I say, okay, I'm getting off here. And Cluffy said, Albert, drive on. And we must have got about half a mile past. And he said, pull over. And I can't really say what he said, but he said, with a little bit of luck, the little might get run over. So we play at Sunderland later on, and I score, and we're in the changing room after the game. We beat them, and Kenny Burns heard Cluffy asking Taylor, who can drive me home tonight, you know? And he said, Peter Taylor said, Wardy can. And Cluffy said to him, no, I think he'd drop me in the Trent. Yeah. And I actually did give him a ride. And as I pulled outside his house, and I lived, to be honest, from the Forest ground, it took me about 25 minutes to get home. And Cluffy was way the other side. So I had to go way past where I live and then come back to where I live. but I pulled outside his house, and he had a pretty long driveway. And I pulled up, he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Yeah, we're here." He said, "Up the driveway." Trying to drive up the driveway. Lazy.
He didn't invite you in for a tea or a coffee, did he? I'm guessing.
No. He didn't offer me anything. No.
And obviously, you know, Peter Taylor was known to be doing a lot of the coaching side of things, wasn't he? And Brian doing the just the match day instructions and all that sort of thing, the man motivational thing. I mean, how did you find that? Was he quite inspirational?
We had a spell where Cluffy would go to Spain somewhere every other weekend. So Pete was in charge. And it was quite strange for this period of time because when Cluffy picked the team, I was sub. And then when Pete was picking the team, I was in and somebody else was sub. It was, everyone knew as well. It was strange to say the least, but...
clearly different opinions on the philosophy there. Ultimately,
yeah, remember we went to Valencia in the Super Cup. And we go to Valencia and Cluffy takes his gardener instead of the trainer. So we were actually playing in the Super Cup first leg at Valencia. And we were all wrapping our own ankles and what have you before the match. Of course, Cluffy bought his gardener because we were there a couple of days and we go to train at the ground. And on the way, we stop at some, like an orange grove. And he's got us all in there picking oranges. We're in our tracksuits and we're in these grown when we're picking oranges.
Absolute man. Brilliant. And there's many more anecdotes beside. We'd probably go on forever with these, couldn't we? But we probably should.
Especially if I was drinking.
Yeah, you can imagine. Yeah. I mean, did you have a reasonably good relationship with him behind it? I know he could do these cantankerous things.
Yeah, he'd come up, he'd say, "You were brilliant today," or "That's, you know, great game." But it was just, we went to Spurs and Dave Needham missed the bus. So Dave drove down, it was a night match. So we were going straight to the ground. And he beat us to the ground and we got to the ground and we're in the changing room. We're all changing. He's changing. And Cluffy come in. He said, "David, what are you doing?" He said, "Changing." He said, "No, you're not. You're going home. Fuck off."
That's all right. No, that's fine. It's fine.
And he made him go then and then. He didn't let him stay for the match. Go. And so a few weeks later, Pete's in charge. Cluffy's not there. And we go to Wolves. And me and Bring Gunn, he was picking me up, right? And we missed the bus. And we drive to Wolves. But it was fine. We got there. "Oh, good, you're here, good." There was no, "You're not playing" or anything. So maybe because there was two of us, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Then you had, when you came back to the Albion, so that was... What was the period there? I think it was sort of early to mid-80s, wasn't it? Was it the 82-83 season?
Yeah,
82-83 season.
Because there was a story I remember you told before somewhere about the loan arrangement and Cluffy not letting you play in the cup final. And you'd not played at Wembley, is that right? Or you may have played for the 21s,
I said my loan spell was up and, like, the semi-finals coming up. So I said to him, I said, "Hey, can I keep the, you know," because Brian wanted me to stay and to the end of the season. And I said to Cluffy, I said, "Yeah, can I stay?" So we're not playing there, am I? So I might as well stay and play here. Yeah. And I probably made a mistake of saying, "We're in a good cup run." And he said, "Son, I've never..." been to a cup final, neither of you. And that was that. So I went back to Forest and then I went back over to Seattle.
Yeah. So do you resent him for that? I mean, obviously it's a massive occasion, especially back in those days. The
can't do anything about it, can you now? I mean, even then you couldn't do anything about it. I mean, nowadays, if it, you know, like players are, it's, they're in more control, the players, aren't they now? I mean, look at Ronaldo. He's not gone on tour with United. He wants to leave. He wants to go somewhere where he can get more goals in the Champions League. Being in his position, you can't blame him. I mean, he wants to finish top scorer ever, I'm sure, in the Champions League. And but in them days, you couldn't do anything. You know, there was no transfer you could do, arrange or anything. So really, we were stuck. Really, in them days, as players.
And then you went over to the States, and you've been there ever since. Seattle Sounders, I think.
Well, actually, when I came back on loan to Brighton, I'd been over that summer to the US.
You've been over, right? Yeah.
And I came back to Forest, and my first game was, I landed on the Thursday, went training Friday morning at Forest. And Clifford said, "You're in the squad. Go and get your clothes and that, because we're going down to London." So I said, "Oh my God." I was knackered, right? So went down to London, and then the next day we were playing Spurs. And I was sub, but somebody got hurt. So I was on the pitch after about 15 minutes. And I actually had a decent game, I thought. I had a good game. And I had to play sort of a number 10 because we had two forwards on at the time. So I had to, like, play behind them, like a midfielder, which was strange. But I remember during that game, I had a through ball. I've gone on to get a through ball, and it's bounced in. And Ray Clements was in goal, and he come out and he's caught it. And I was a bit late, and I just couldn't stop. And I absolutely hammered him in the chest, and he started chasing me. I remember that. Yeah. So anyway, after that game, he said, Brighton want to know. So I went, that's when I came down on loan to Brighton.
And then you eventually moved to the States. Most valuable player, was it, at Seattle Sounders? Number of years. NASL, as it was then.
Vancouver Whitecaps. Yeah. And then I went indoor. Yeah. In fact, when I was leaving Vancouver, it was 84, the QPR, Venables, a couple of teams come in, but the indoor offered more money. So I was over here, so I went and played indoor for like six seasons. And then Loro was at Tampa playing for the Rowdies. Rodney was the manager, Rodney Marsh, and Loro called. He said, "Fancy coming down for the summer?" I thought, "Yeah," I said, "I can." I remember when we used to play, when I was with Seattle and Vancouver, playing in Florida. It's, oh my God, it's too hot, right, you know? But when you get here, I'm sure your blood must thin out or something. But I loved it here, so I've never moved. I never will.
There we go. Yeah.
I hate cold weather.
Yeah, well, we don't have to worry about that in England at the moment, but normally we do, to be fair. Yeah. And you met your other half over there, I assume, who is American. Yeah. Is that
right? Yes.
The lovely Jackie. Yeah. I've got a feeling he's listening because you're looking to the side of the screen now, slightly nervously.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
And it's a great place to be, isn't it? It's fantastic. And you're doing.
Yeah.
and more you've recent times.
Everything's here. Beaches. Yeah. Disney. Yeah. Universal.
Yeah.
We've got everything. Everything. And it's just nice all the time. I mean, in the winter, possibly January time, you might get a couple of days in a row where it'll go in the 30s, but it'll go back up to the 60s, 70s. I mean, Christmas Day was like 80 this past year.
Yeah,
it's nice to be able to wear jeans or anything but shorts, because that's all I ever wear.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. The only time I wear something that's heavy and thick and what have you is if it is cold in the evening and I'm coaching. But yeah, that's it. Because if you go out and it's cold, you're in the car and you just get out for a few, so you have a jacket on, but that's it.
Yeah.
Yes. The only time I get to wear warm clothes is when I'm in England.
Yeah. And you come over from time to time. You've had a lot of association with Brent, haven't you?
Three times a year. It's the pandemic. I was there November of 2019, and I was supposed to come over for games in March at the Amex. But that, you know, that crap happened. So,
yeah, it's a shame because you've had this association with Brent for a few years now, haven't you? Since, which for anyone that doesn't know, I'm pretty sure they do, the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund. Yeah. Robert Eaton's an Albion fan that was in the States, died in the Trade Center. 2001, and they started from 2002 onwards a rent game between Palace and Albion fans. And you've been involved from, I don't know when did you get involved with that? Was that about halfway through the decade?
I think I played in the third one.
The third one, yeah. It's about 2004, that would be, wouldn't it?
Something like that.
I remember that was the last time I saw you in the flesh, Peter. I think you scored a penalty. At the Dripping Pan. Yeah.
Was that the 4-1 back to 4-all game?
Yeah, I think so.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Did we win that? Yeah. I can't remember. Did we win it on pens? I can't remember.
We did.
We won on pens,
Good. Stick it to that Palace lot, yeah. And you've been, I think you did say your doctor's advised not to play football and watch out for the knees or the hip or whatever it is. And I mean,
I had a total titanium knee and the right knee.
Yeah.
And that was in 06, December 06. And in July 07, I was playing in the,
What, the Renf game, do you mean?
The left back. Can't think of his bloody name. That's terrible.
For who? For Brighton?
Yeah, like Brighton, yeah.
Gary Williams.
No.
Brent Pearce.
His testimonial.
Not Kerry Mayo, was it?
Kerry. Yeah.
Kerry Mayo,
The old people playing in a game before his testimonial.
Yeah.
So I played in that. So that was about 7 months after I had my new knee. And it's still great. It's my left knee that's really up the kibosh.
Right. Another operation, maybe. You could be the $6 million. Yeah. That's right.
I played at the Amex, too, for Rem. When they had that, the only time that they played at the Amex.
Yeah. Brilliant. So you played at the new ground. Superb. And that brings us neatly on to the subject of the current era. You know, we've finally got that stadium. We were talking off air about the planning application, how long it took, and it's a long, long story. We won't go into it all again. Everyone, all Albion fans already know, of course. But we finally got there in 2011. We've now celebrated more than a decade at the stadium. And for part of that, we've escalated our way into the Premier League. And we look like we belong there now, don't we? I mean, what's your take on them now? What do you make of the current crop?
Well, obviously, Potter's done a good job.
Yeah.
I thought Chris did a good job.
Yeah.
Chris Hughton, you know, got us out into the Premier League. May have been a bit defensive minded, perhaps, but he did a fantastic job also. And and we got some. I heard City are trying to get Cucurella now.
Yeah, they made a bid today. Well, today as we speak and record this, $30 million, which I think is ultimately utterly derisory. I think
he's too old. He's played well this year.
Mm. Yeah, he might go in the end. Who knows? But they'll have to meet the
valuation. Well, you knew the was going to go eventually.
Yeah, yeah. But some fantastic players in there, isn't there? And some of the new ones coming through. Caicedo, for example. You've got Sanchez still in his early days. There's just talent all over the pitch, isn't there? And you've got this new crop of people we signed last summer that are now coming into the equation this summer. Mitoma, Undav, Sarmiento's coming back.
Good scouting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's it, isn't it? It's a global affair now, and the scouting is good. Europe-wide, global-wise, it's pretty good as well.
Yes.
Do you see it going in any other direction?
Game this year, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. We've got our highest ever position, ninth, last season. Do you think we can match that this year, Peter? What do you think?
It'll be hard.
Yeah.
But consistency. I mean, before we were playing well and getting beat. And now we're playing well and we're getting lucky with some goals. And, you know, we're starting to win those games we used to lose.
Hmm.
I think middle of the table is good still. It had cost a fortune to get a real goal scorer. Although Welbeck and
Orpe.
Yeah. They're not regular goal scorers, are they?
Not as much as we would like. I mean they're mucking in. I think
they are.
Yeah, they're okay, but I think we do need a pivotal.
But if we got someone who was just more prolific, then you know, I think we'd be higher than ninth. Well,
Wardy, get that other knee sorted because I think we might need.
Yeah, I've got boots. Yeah,
you'd do all right in this team, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask how you felt. You know, if you could roll back the years, how you would fit into modern day football, and I could see you playing in the Potter team because you're incredibly mobile, fast. So I don't know about the defending from the front. Did you ever used to defend from the front? I don't really remember that in the era. But
don't try and tackle somebody.
There's a reason you don't remember it, David.
We used to close them down, you know what I mean? But we didn't run all over the place. In fact, when I went to Forest, I went running after somebody once because, you know, you want to. And Clovis said, don't waste your time and energy running back. Use your time and energy going forward. So.
Yeah. Why not? Absolutely. And at the pick of the bunch at the moment, who stands out for you? Who do you like the most from this current team?
I like Cucurella.
So
he's good going forward. I like. Yeah, he's got good hair.
The wife likes the long hair, doesn't she? Yeah.
I like. Can't think. My brain's gone. I like the Belgian.
Oh, Trossard.
Trossard.
Yeah.
He's a good player. I like him.
He's getting.
I think he might get a few more goals as well.
Hmm. He's going to get better.
Yeah, he stepped up last season, didn't he? He got a few more last season. So,
yeah. I think he'll get more this year. Basuma's gone. I mean, I like Dunk.
Yeah. stalwarts of the club now, more than 10 years.
I think he could get more caps, but, you know, yeah. I'm the England boss.
Well, he's in the same boat as you, isn't he, at the moment with that?
Yeah, yes. In fact, I was at that game.
Hmm. Well, the USA.
The USA. I was there.
Yeah.
We'd actually brought a kid over to try out at Glasgow Rangers and Charlton Athletic. And so we were there for that England game. So we went to Wembley and watched the match.
Oh, brilliant. Superb. Well, hopefully you'll be back over again soon. Before we let you go, Peter, just I've got to ask these two here, Andy and David, of their enduring memories of you, Wardy. Let's go with Andy first. If you had to pick one moment, one memory from the bunch of Wardy, obviously we're talking the Albion era here. Well, I think we are anyway. I hope we are. What would it be for you? What stands out for you?
I don't know if it's really a specific memory of a specific game, but it's more about just generally. Peter Ward was the first player that I remember watching that did things with a football that I didn't know you could do. It just stood out in that way, and I think that's where the magic came from, really. That even the use of the word magic. And so that's it for me, really.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, it's not because I still have a scarf that says Peter Ward is magic.
Yeah, yeah.
That was it.
Well, that's what you want to do, don't you? As a fan, you want to go to watch people play football and do, and for them to do things that you can't do. That's why they're on the field and you're watching, you know. And it was just sometimes I don't even know how you did it, to be honest with you, Peter. But I was just so pleased that you did do it on such a regular occasion.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, the two songs you've got. You've got Peter Ward is magic as the slogan, and then of course you've got He Shot, He Scored. It must be Peter Ward, and the Wardy's Wonderland song. So they'll endure forever. We will continue to sing those forever. Which is great. And you, how you occupy 12 positions on the pitch, I don't know, but I'm very impressed you managed to do it according to the song.
Yeah, goalkeeper too, and sub.
Yeah, exactly. You were the soft bench as well. There we go. I mean, Andy says you could do things with the football that he's never seen. I can do things with the football you've never seen, but unfortunately, they're all horrendous miss hits and things like that. Things where it's not possible to miss hit it. I can manage it. Anyway, David, your enduring memory, if there is one that stands out, what would it be?
Well, I think it's the same as Andy, really. And I remember when you first came into the side, Peter. You know, you were just electric, and every time. You know, you were one of those players that every time you got on the ball, you know, as a fan, you expected something to happen. And with you, it generally did happen. And so it was fantastic to watch. I suppose I've already mentioned that Mansfield match where you got the hat trick. I can just remember you scoring a goal at Aldershot as well, of all places. And I remember the Aldershot ground, if you remember it, didn't have a terrace behind the goal. So all the Albion fans were... standing behind the goal, no steps or anything. But I think you scored at that end, as I remember. It's a strange memory to have because it's probably not one of the most memorable matches. But I just remember that. I think that might have been in your first season or maybe second season.
Yeah,
as something I wanted to ask actually, do you have a sort of encyclopedic memory for every goal that you scored? You know, in the
Albion or Now and again, I'll remember somebody will say something and and you do remember, but I think it's got to be while you're all having a drink and you're reminiscing and you remember stuff. But it was really nice. The Brighton fans were tremendous, tremendous.
Yeah.
And they still are, yes.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say, I mean, I'd seen, because I've been supporting the club since 1969. And so I'd seen one promotion before you arrived, but that was it. And that was in 72. And that was a good side, but there was nothing quite like, the team coming up through from the third division up to the old first division, and that that excitement of that era. And obviously now, you know, it's been matched in a way by getting to the Premier League, but
And staying in.
I think, you know, when you're younger, it's kind of, it means more to you as well. So never forget those days.
They're built into you. That's them. 10 years that you were just in awe of what's going on, and you remember it.
Yeah.
I think my enduring memory of you, as mentioned earlier, I'm just a little bit like younger, so I don't quite remember you clearly or vividly enough to remember any specific games for the playing days. But mine is from a different scenario. Now, the Withdean era, there was an end of season where you had been invited. It was a ticketed event at the Duke of Boots, Duke of Wellington. I don't know if you remember. I was in the pub that day.
Was I on the bar?
You were. You were standing on the bar singing anti-palace songs. Yes. It's that one. Yeah. We were in the pub. It was the end of season game. I think we'd already wrapped up whatever we'd done. I think it was a promotion year, but I can't remember what it was. We were already in there, I think, and we knew you were coming. And I think we happened to be doing one of the Wardy songs when you walked in, which was quite convenient. And we were right by the door, so we chatted with you as soon as you came in, you and your wife. And fast forward, I don't know how much longer into the evening it was, but yes, you were standing on the bar singing anti-palace songs to a rapturous reception. Fantastic. You can't beat that. You're one of the all-time Albion legends, probably the all-time Albion legend, singing anti-palace stuff on the bar in a local pub, end of a season when everyone's in a good mood. You can't beat that.
No, you can't. I actually go for a drink now and again with Mark Lindsay, who played for Palace.
Yeah.
He lives here. And we used to play together over 40s. And 1 came over, who played for Palace, who played with me in under 21s as well. He's passed away now. But I went out with him and Mark, the two of them, and we had a picture like this. And I think I captioned it, the only time these two Palace players ever got near me.
Right. I love it. Absolutely love it. That's great.
I made him on my 60th birthday party a few years back. I made him wear a Brighton shirt.
he
wore a Brighton shirt.
Yeah, I'm impressed you managed it. I went on my friend's stag do, and he's a Brighton fan, and someone brought a Palace shirt and said, right, part of your stag thing, you've got to wear this. And he just stood there holding it like that in disgust and dropped it on the floor at Gatwick Airport. And no, not doing that, not doing it. So I'm fair play if you've got an ex-Palace player to wear one.
Well, I did, yeah. He wore a Brighton shirt.
Do you know what the variation of your song was that they sung? Because I never heard it, but... I think they did a version of it, didn't they? The "He Shot, He Scored" song.
The shot he missed, he must be pissed.
Oh, right. Okay. Fair enough, yeah. Not really historically accurate, though, is it?
I remember at Wolves, when I got a hat-trick at Wolves, and it was the pitch was hard, it was snowing, it was icy, and for some reason, Glenn Wilson had purchased all these turf boots, you know, with the little pimples on the bottom, and we were fine. But early in the game, the ball came over, and I'm on a six, and I've put it over the bar, and they're all singing behind the goal. He shot, he missed, he must be, you know, the Wolves fans were. So I scored a little bit later on with a header, believe it or not. And I went to the crowd, you know, get them going.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. But on that note, it's a great way to end it, I think. And all I can say is, Peter, we've got to have you over at some point. Let's get you on another bar somewhere in Brighton singing those songs.
I'll have to come to London to do one, you know, go to one of your Seagulls over London.
Absolutely.
We'd love that.
Very
we'd
well.
Love that, yeah. Yeah, we'd love
Let
it.
Let us know when you want to come. We'll organise it. We'll organise it. Absolutely love to have you there. And if you're, whenever you're in the UK, we'll love to get you a drink in as well and celebrate those good times you have with the Albion.
Marvellous.
Thank you, Peter.
Peter, thank you very much
thank
for joining
you.
Us.
We'll
love to get you back on. But for now, thank you for joining us, Mr. Peter Ward. Wardy, we love you.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Wardy. Thank you.
Up the Albion. Sports Social Podcast Network.